This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits. Make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone. And coming back on the show today is ESPN legend Tim Kirkjian. He apparently is jumping into Boone's world, that world being the podcast world. Timmy, you think it's easy?
The technology itself, Brett, has got me completely bamboozled, which is why I have my son, Jeffrey, with me. He is a magician with all things technology-wise. We do the podcast now from his house, so I drive 3 hours from my house to his house just so I'm sitting next to him in case anything goes wrong, because there is no worse feeling for a 67-year-old man to be sitting alone in his office knowing if something goes wrong, I have zero chance of fixing it.
And the name of the podcast, Is This a Great Game? I'll tell you, Jeff, how are you going to – Timmy, he's pretty spoiled now in his ways. How do you get – you got to pay him well to drive that far? I mean, he's not used to this stuff. He's used to the black car. He's not going Uber X. He's going Uber Black.
Brett, let me just tell you, the only reason why he drives this far is to prevent him from having to set anything up himself in his own home office. So the microphones, the cameras, the lighting, everything I have handled in my basement. And half the episodes, Brett, we're watching the baby monitor while we're recording a podcast because I'm also dadding at the same time with a 7.5-month-old upstairs taking a nap. And I say, Dad, we have 35 to 45 minutes to get this out. We got to do it now.
No, I feel you. And Jeff, you're a lot younger than me. So I believe me, at the beginning, I was very challenged with all this technology. Still not great at it, but I can work my way around and get to. And Mike, our producer, he helps me out a lot. So whenever I have a slip, he jumps in and goes, Booney, you got to do it this way. Try, Jeff, I'll tell you this. You think you got it tough? You try getting Bob Boone on the show. Yeah. Now. And if my mom's not available, you try getting him on, and then we'll talk.
Right. Yesterday, Brett, we taped something with Tito Francona, and it was hilariously funny as always. But we had kind of a competition. Who was worse in technology, me or Tito? He swears he's worse than me. I find that hard to believe. But two guys in their mid-60s yesterday actually pulled off a show because our genius son here figured it all out.
And today you're at separate locations, right?
Right. I'm at home. Jeff's in Philadelphia. I'm going back to Philadelphia in 2 days to shoot another podcast.
Very cool. Very
yeah,
cool.
Brett, I just want to let you know that ahead of this appearance with my dad at home, he's called me 3 times today. Have you gotten the link yet? How do I get on? Let's make sure I don't mess this one up. I didn't realize co-hosting a podcast with my dad, I would not just be a co-host and a producer of the show. I would end up being basically managing editor of his Twitter as well. It's been a lot of work.
But I'll tell you what, Timmy's logged a lot of miles in this industry, and you know what? He kind of earned it. I'm looking at it now, you know, things I do with my dad, and I think, Dad, you're a pain in the ass, but you know what? You've kind of earned it. So, and believe me, I'm trying to set that precedent because I've got four kids, and I want them to earn it and take care of their dad here. I still got a little more time, but I want them to be taking care of me like you're taking care of your pops. Jeff, I'm going to put you on the spot. Tell me something, and I know a lot, that I don't know about your father.
That's a tough question, Brett, you know, because there's so many amazing stories. One of my favorite things to tell people that I don't think they realize about my dad is that he's not just a Hall of Fame baseball writer, and I'm going to be corny, and I'm going to say he's a Hall of Fame brother and a Hall of Fame son and a Hall of Fame dad. When I was in the 10th grade, my grandmother moved in with our family because she was experiencing dementia and later Alzheimer's. And along with his brother, they took care of her. He gave up his master bedroom in their house, God bless my mother, and to allow my grandmother to live in a bigger area because she's not going up and down stairs. And then after her passing in 2020, in 2021, his brother got diagnosed with ALS, my Uncle Matt, and he then took care of him for 2 years until he passed in fall of 2023. The one thing that people don't realize about my dad is during all of this time, he was writing books and appearing on ESPN and going to games and doing all these things. So he's getting up at the butt crack of dawn, drinking a Diet Mountain Dew, trying to write a chapter of a book, and then getting his mother out of bed and helping her get ready for the day, and then traveling and getting on a plane just to fly back 8 hours later in order to be at home with his family. And not once, Brett, did I ever feel like my dad taking care of my grandmother, taking care of all of us, traveling, doing the job he did so well and continues to do, did I feel like he wasn't a great dad and wasn't there for all of my games and all of my field trips and everything. He is the greatest dad in the world for taking care of family. He's taught me, that's the number one thing he taught me besides being a great broadcaster and storyteller. The number most important thing is take care of your family. He taught me that.
Well, that's very cool. And Timmy, that's gotta be, as much as you're stoic and you're used to doing this, when your son speaks about you that way, that's a pretty cool thing. I know, you know, when I'm getting to that age now where my kids are starting to grow up a little bit and I have those moments and I don't expect it from them, but when I hear it, I'm kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. They actually appreciate me a tiny bit. So those are some pretty awesome words.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it. The quicker answer would have been, could you say that maybe Brett doesn't know about me is I've got these gigantic hands. I am the littlest guy in the world.
You got the Johnny Bench hands.
Really big. Well, they're not Johnny Bench hands, but they're pretty big for a guy who's 5'4" and wears a 7.5 shoe. I can palm a basketball with both hands at the same time. It doesn't do me any good as a 67-year-old sports writer, but I have big hands. That's the one thing you might not know about me.
Big hands means, of course, big gloves. Without a doubt. Come on, Timmy. Jeff, yeah. This is going to be a family-oriented. I think it's cool. It's generations of Kirkchins. Recently on my podcast, I just had Tony Gwynn Jr. on. He's doing the broadcasting for the San Diego Padres. And we talked about myself growing up. I grew up in Philadelphia around Veterans Stadium, later moved. My dad got traded to the Angels, so I was running around Anaheim Stadium for years. I believe recently you had Eduardo Perez on, who was a teammate of mine briefly, but we were teammates in Cincinnati. And he talked about growing up around the ballpark. I want to know how you grew up, and did your dad drag you along to work? I mean, I don't look at it as my dad dragged me along. I looked at it as I forced him to take me to the ballpark, or it was the end of the world, end of a good day for him. But did you tag along with dad as a kid to all these venues and to watch him do what he does?
No doubt. It was such a blessing. And my favorite memories are that of, you know, we used to go, I have one older sister. We used to go mom, dad, you know, son and daughter to Cooperstown every year. Well, eventually my sister became a teenager. My mom got busy. They said, why don't the guys just go? Those were the greatest memories of all time because I had the ability to see my dad at work. But Brett, I think you can relate to this. Being put in that situation, being put in a clubhouse like you were, or at the Hall of Fame like I was, or at an all-star game when you're around these huge players, these heroes of yours, you're kind of forced to become an adult and carry yourself in a way that doesn't embarrass your father, right? And sure. And shows respect to the Boone, or in this case, the Kirkshen name. And I think that was so valuable because my dad never looked at me and said, you better behave when we walk in there. There was just this assumed, hey, you're going with me. You're an adult in this situation. You have to carry yourself, eye contact. When someone asks you a question, it's not a one-word answer. No, you have to engage with them. And it led to some of the greatest memories of all time. My favorite being Cal Ripken, Tony Gwynn, speaking of, got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And my dad, the following day after their induction, had a chance to interview them on the stage to kind of talk about how they were feeling about now being members of the Hall. Well, during Cal's speech, his induction speech, he opened it up with a story saying he was doing a Cal Ripken baseball camp and he was speaking to these students. And at the very end, after speaking about his career and about being a, you know, Hall of Fame shortstop and third baseman, kid comes up to him and goes, am I supposed to know you? So after they walk off the stage at this big interview, Tony Gwynn, Tim Kirkshen, and Cal Ripken Jr., my dad introduces me to Cal Ripken Jr., and I might have been 11 or 12 at the time. And he shakes my hand, and I look at him, and I say, am I supposed to know you? Yeah. And that moment was so cool for me to take a funny moment from his speech and use it. And the look on his face is like, I thought, this is really cool. I've entertained somebody with a joke, and now I can be myself, and he seems more relaxed. And I've taken that with me. So that situation, hanging out with my dad and being in a, you know, in that situation was really special for me.
And Brett, on that trip to Cooperstown, or one of those trips, Jeffrey was 10 years old, and I'm doing radio rows. I'm doing like 6 radio shows. So a New York, a producer of a very small station in New York, comes up to Jeffrey, who's 10, and says, would you like to do an interview about what it's like to be a 10-year-old at Cooperstown? So Jeffrey did 8 minutes as a 10-year-old. He did so exceptionally well. The producer told me that immediately. And Jeffrey came up to me as soon as that was over and said, that's what I want to do. He was 10 years old. He's 30 now. The light went on when he was 10 with 1 8-minute interview. And now he's doing exactly what he wanted to do when he was a little kid.
Well, that's very cool. And you talk about the upbringing in our childhood. Yeah, different venues. You know, your dad covering, my dad playing. But we have some similarities. I can really, I know what you're talking about when you say it's an assumed thing. You know, the big misconception for somebody like me who's grown up in that generation, you know, coming from my grandpa playing for so long, then my dad and constantly being hit with those questions as a young kid is, oh, big shoes to fill. Well, I didn't feel that way. I felt, quit asking me about my dad and my grandpa. Love them to death, but watch me. That was kind of my attitude. But the misconception is, oh, well, Brett, you grew up in this baseball atmosphere. What an advantage for you. And I thought, well, I don't think it was a disadvantage, but my dad never talked. My dad never one time taught me how to hit, throw, field a ground ball. Dad, you think about it. When I was growing up, I was 3 o'clock, school gets out. Now I got baseball practice, whatever. Dad's already on the way to the ballpark. And I was fortunate enough. I had a dad that was playing. I was in the minor leagues and dad was still in the big leagues. So that childhood of him coming to my games and working with me, it didn't exist. But the point I'm trying to make in this long-winded explanation is I had the same thing. The thing I learned from my dad wasn't how to play. He gave me the venue. He gave me the bat. He gave me the equipment. He said, Brett, I hope you love this game. It's kind of the family business. And I happen to love it from day one. But the biggest thing I took away from my childhood was my dad taught me how to be a big leaguer. He taught me how to behave when I was in a big league clubhouse. He taught me how to be a pro. And if you know anything about Bob Boone, very respected guy, not only amongst people, but teammates and opponents. And that's the one thing I learned from him. Like, man, that's how you behave like a pro. And how he carried himself, how he carried himself in the locker room, how he carried himself publicly around the game, good times, bad times. That's the one thing that I really take away from my childhood that dad really made a huge impact on me. All right. Is this a great game or what is the name of the podcast the Kirkjans just came out with? Whose idea was it?
It was Jeffrey's idea. He's been trying to do this for 3 or 4 years, but you know, we've had some health issues, as Jeffrey detailed at home, and we had to get past those, and we'll never get past those, by the way. But this seemed like the right time to do it, and it's something we've always wanted to do. We have great chemistry together. And, you know, Jeffrey's not exactly a baseball guy like I am. I mean, when he was in high school, he was a star of all the school plays. He was in the choir. He can sing. He can dance. He's really talented. And his poor dad can only do like one thing. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm not trained to do anything else. So that's why this kind of works. Jeffrey knows everything about music and technology and pop culture. And so we get into some of that on the podcast, because I learn something every day, and whatever he needs to learn about baseball, I hope to be able to teach him. So it was Jeffrey's idea. I jumped at it finally and said, all right, let's go. And about maybe 2 months later, we had a podcast on the air. So we worked pretty quickly and we worked really well together.
And Brett, I think you can relate to this, having your own podcast. It just feels good to have something to call your own, right? It's something to say, you know what, I'm glad I get an opportunity to tell my stories about my dad, about being a big leaguer, about whatever it is. I just feel like for so long, my dad has not had the opportunity to just sit down and just talk baseball. You know, people would say, oh, I would die to go to a game with Tim Kirkjian and just sit there for 3 hours and just talk baseball with him. But in the world of TV, and especially in the world of social media, everything's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 12-second clips. It's a hit from the field that you get 30 seconds to tell us what's going on with the players, and then it's done. But in order for him to really dive deep into the stories that he's gained and gathered in almost 50 years of covering this sport, this is his opportunity. And I've seen this, and I wanted to give him this chance while, one, terrible timing on our part with a small baby at the home now, but we eventually made it to where we are. And I'm just proud to be a little part of my dad's opportunity to tell his stories and not have, you know, a clock going in the background telling him he's got to hit a commercial.
Right. And it's the platform, this, you know, I started this during the pandemic, and I thought, you know, I'm going to start getting back into the media a little bit. And talking baseball, it started with actually Andre Reed was my first guinea pig. I remember seeing him at the gym. I said, Andre, my agent wants me to start a podcast. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. And you're my guinea pig. Well, we're going in our fourth year. Now the one thing I did, Tim and Jeff, for that matter, is growing up in the game, playing this game for a long time professionally, I've done thousands and thousands of interviews. I've got Tim Kirkjian's following me my whole career, asking me questions. That was easy for me. Doing an interview, I can sit there and BS with the best of them. But I really think I took it for granted as a player. The reporting side, the broadcasting side, it's all right, they got questions for me, okay. When I got to this side and had to really formulate, and I don't like to call them interviews because I like more of conversations. You know, I like to think of a podcast, we're sitting in a golf cart, BSing, and that's what it is. It's a conversation. It's not, okay, now Jeff, what are you doing today? Tim, what are you doing? You know, it's not that, but it took a little process for me. And over the years, I've really gained an appreciation for this side of the ledger and the prep work that goes into it. What we talk about in the interviews, how we formulate them. And I really, it's been a humbling process for me because it's something I've never done before. But at the same time, it's been really fulfilling and kind of like a second occupation for me after all I did my entire life from what I can remember is play baseball. And I don't know. I think it's a really cool thing.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right, Jeff. Brett talks about me chasing after him all these years. I'll never forget he had a home run at Safeco once in the upper deck. So it's a phoner because I can't fly from Maryland to Safeco Field just because there wasn't enough time. So I got him on the phone and I said something like, "Hey, you hit a ball in the upper deck yesterday." And he went like this, "I do that all the time in batting practice. It's not a big deal." And I said, "Jeezy peasy." But the point is, Brett, you've hit it on the head. The hardest part of our job in the media is to ask a good question that is going to elicit a good answer. I took a course at ESPN on how to ask a good question, and I was like 55 years old when I took the class. I'm thinking, I should be teaching this class. But there is an art to it, and Brett, you're absolutely right. When you know an interview has gone well is when it's not a question and answer period. It's a conversation where you're just going back and forth. And we've done a few of those now, Jeffrey and I, where it's a 3-person conversation as opposed to us interviewing John Smoltz or Eduardo Perez or Tito Francona. That's when you know things are going well, when you can get into a conversation like that.
And Brett, I think with the podcast, it's so much fun. And I'm sure you see this with your guests. Some of the best moments you have interviewing might not have anything to do with baseball, right? It might not, right. It might have to do with something that they're interested in, especially during COVID times. Everybody was getting into different hobbies and different things. And that's what makes a great podcast and a great conversation is, yeah, we can talk about being a big leaguer. We have Chris Young, the general manager of the Texas Rangers on our show that released this morning. And we didn't go into Jordan Montgomery not signing. We didn't go into that. My favorite moment was when he told us that Chris Young, the outfielder, he's been asked to sign Chris Young's card and they look nothing alike.
Yeah. There's a little height difference.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or that Chris Young, the country music star, had to come out publicly on Twitter after Chris Young, the GM, got the job saying, "Hey, I'm not the general manager of the Texas Rangers. I'm still just Chris Young, country music star." Those kind of moments are only given to you in that conversational aspect. And that's why we, Dad and I, love doing podcasts like this, especially when you guys have a long-standing rapport like Dad has had with you and so many major leaguers.
And Brett, I learned something about Eduardo Perez, who's my dear friend. I travel with him for years. I know him like the back of my hand. And he told me when he was in the Reds clubhouse with his dad, had to be around there similar time. Eddie was absolutely the best at, as soon as the game was over, he would go straight to the keg and he could pour a beer as well as any bartender. And he would get a beer and deliver it to Johnny Bench, get a beer and deliver it to his dad. 13-year-old Eduardo Perez was absolutely great around the keg. And I'd never heard that story. And he told me, it's the first time I've ever told that story to anyone. And I'm thinking, how could you wait that long? That's what a great story is all about.
Yeah. Man, I had one like that too. Well, my dad had a different take. When I was young, when it came, cause Bob Boone, he's the valedictorian. He's the buttoned up, straight as an arrow guy. I worked in the visiting clubhouse, Timmy, when I was a kid for the Angels.
Right.
And Billy Martin comes to town. I'm probably 14 years old. And Billy Martin has no clue that Bob Boone, I'm Bob Boone's son. You know, I'm not going to mention it. I'm just trying to make a couple extra bucks. You know, I'm going to school. I'm a freshman in high school. I'm playing baseball, but when I can make it, they give me a job. You know, I'm clean. I'm doing wet stuff. I'm running errands for the players. I'm getting tips. And Billy Martin has no idea that Bob Boone is my father. You know, he's catching for the Angels at the time. And he goes to me, you know, Billy just kind of gives me that. And my whole thing was, well, I'm going to be nice because I need a tip. Billy goes, hey, kid, come here. And he brings me over. He goes, I want you to run up to level 3. Ask for Juanita. She's got a bottle of vodka for me. Have it here after the game. Okay, Mr. Martin, you know, and I run up and I get it. And, you know, after the game, I'm riding home with my dad. I said, Pops, Billy Martin gave me a 20 buck tip tonight. He's like, oh yeah, good. What'd you do? He goes, I had to go up and get him this vodka from level 3. The look in his eyes, like, you did what? I said, I just went and ran an errand for him. And that was Bob Boone. He's like, my 14-year-old son doesn't go get liquor for an adult. That was just how my dad is. The next day, he came over to that clubhouse and wore out Billy Martin. And I'm sitting in the corner going, oh, there goes my tips from him. So that was my booze story as a kid growing up in the clubhouse.
Right. My Anaheim story for Aaron Boone, of course, Brett's younger brother. I went to Aaron's 40th birthday party, okay? And I met three of his dorky friends, and they don't even mind being called dorky friends, from junior high school in Anaheim. And they went to the 40th birthday party because Aaron is still best friends with these guys. But this was the best part for me, is that Aaron had been in school about a month, and those three guys got together and said, I don't know who that new guy is, the great athlete, but someone said that he is Bob Boone's son. And Aaron Boone never told anyone in the junior high school that I'm the son of the everyday catcher for the Angels. Jeff, if that were me, I would go to school and say, by the way, first thing, raise your hand. My dad catches for the Angels. Look at me. Yeah. But that's not what Aaron Boone did. So that story tells me more about your brother, Brett, than any story. And the story about your dad and the liquor, that tells you all you need to know about him.
That's, and by the way, Aaron and dad are so similar, and to the point where they butt heads, where my dad and myself, we have that more of a, now being adult, we have, our relationship is much different than Aaron and my father. Both have great relationships, but mine is more, I know what to do. Dad and Aaron, they're so much alike. They butt heads in the middle. They'll argue about everything and anything, where I'll just come in and I'll finish the argument with the actual correct answer. But Aaron and dad, oil and water when it comes to getting along. But the way Aaron manages, the way he cares, the passion that Aaron has, the real, you know, I look at my brother, and it's not because he's just my brother. He's a high, high integrity guy. Always has been, just like Bob Boone. I mean, these guys are truth tellers. They live about as honest of a life as you possibly could. I teased my dad. I said, you go through a yellow life, you turn yourself in. You know, that's the type of guy he is. And Aaron is the same way. And it's I say it in the most, you know, complimentary way, but they're both very similar. Timmy, I turned your podcast on. I was listening to some episodes here and there, just some, you know, some snippets. And I closed my eyes. It's tough to tell you apart. Yeah. Now, you're not Tony Gwynn Jr. Oh, the same. Wow. He's identical. I couldn't tell if Tony Sr. was alive and I got a phone call and it was Jr. at this particular stage of his life. I could not tell them apart. Identical. I've never seen family members have the same voice. You guys are very similar. So who sounds the most like Tim Kirchen? Tim Kirchen, Jeff Kirchen, or Elliot Johnson?
All right. Well, first off, unfortunately, I sound more like me than anyone. And the only person in the world who has a worse voice than Jeffrey is me, sadly. But Jeffrey used to work in Las Vegas, and Amy was his sidekick on the radio station. And he spent like 14 straight hours with Amy one day and was talking to her like the entire time. And after 14 hours, she just had to put her hands over her ears because she'd heard enough from Jeffrey. And then she told me she went home after spending 14 hours with my son. She turned the TV on. And I was on TV when she turned the TV on. So she thought she had escaped this terrible voice. And instead, she gets me. And as for Elliot Johnson, Jeff, if you don't know, Elliot Johnson is one of the funniest people in the world. Brilliant guy, by the way. And he did an impersonation of me. He was the second guy to do it in spring training 2012. JP Aaron Sebia was the first. And Elliot Johnson made me laugh out loud because he captured my voice pretty well. And it's pretty hard for a grown man to talk like this, but he got it really close.
Well, Booty, you know, I talked to a couple of rival executives, and Elliot Johnson has the best Tim Kirkshin impression in the month of June in a dome stadium since the live ball era, I'll tell you.
Right. And then Tim Dillard, you remember Tim Dillard, Brett, right? Tim Dillard with the Brewers, he came over and did an impersonation of me, but Aaron was right there. So we're sitting at the set, and here comes Tim Dillard, and in order to make it as true as possible, he like crouched down when he did the interview. He did my voice so he could be really short also. I thought that was unnecessary. JP Aaron Sebia was the first guy to do it. So I asked him once, finally, after all this was over, and I said, JP, tell me that you do a bunch of other impersonations. Tell me you could do Jack Nicholson. And he goes, no, I can only imitate you. You're the only one. That's when it's really bad.
And I'll tell you who's good at imitations now that we're thinking about it. Aaron Boone. Well, on the podcast, Timmy, we call him Uncle Arnie. That's what he is to my kids, you know, because we call him Arnie as a kid growing up. That was his nickname amongst our family. Like my mom will call him and go, Arnie, how you doing? So he's always Arnie. Now my kids call him Uncle Arnie, so he's Uncle Arnie. Anyway, Aaron Boone, world-class imitator.
He, Jeff, you have no idea how good he is. I traveled with him for 5 years. He can do mannerisms. He can do voices. He could do producers on Baseball Tonight, meaning he's not just doing famous people. So I had him on my show, the Sunday Baseball Tonight once, and he said, and I said, Booney, I want you to do some batting stances for me, because not only can he do impersonations, nobody imitates batting stances better than Aaron Boone. And he looks at me and he goes, I'm working on my Joe Torre. So I expect to see Joe Torre from 1971 hitting 363. Instead, he does still the funniest thing I've ever seen. He did Joe Torre later in his managerial career, walking to the mound to make a pitching change. It was the most distinctive walk ever. And we howled out loud. It was so funny. Joe Torre thought it was the funniest thing ever. And I shouldn't say this, but we went to the Little League World Series one year. Booney and I covered it. And Kyle Peterson had never seen the Joe Torre walk by Aaron Boone. So we stumble out of Franco's at 1 o'clock in the morning, and Aaron Boone did the Joe Torre walk in the middle of the street. And I almost peed in my pants. I was laughing so loud. It was hilarious. That's who Aaron Boone is.
I'll tell you, it's so funny, Tim. Because now, you know, you'll see him and he's, you know, I kind of get on him. I'm like, that's enough with getting thrown out, Aaron. Okay, it's cute. Yeah, we know you back your players and all that. Quit yelling at the umpire for a strike off the plate just because it's not in that stupid box, which is not even the legitimate box. So I give Aaron a hard time about that. But I'll tell you, that's I see Aaron arguing with and you'll notice when he argues with umpires, it's almost like he's reasoning with them. Like he doesn't want to offend him. He doesn't want to make him look bad, but he's so passionate. And I laugh when people, hey, I saw your brother got thrown out. I said, you know, it reminds me of when he was a kid. he's the exact same person. You talked to me about the imitations. He had him down then. I mean, that those early Philly teams with Rose and Schmidt and Bull Luzinski and Manny
McBride. Yeah.
Oh, he would sit there. And when the game started, I wasn't anything like this. You know, we're 4 years apart. So there was an age gap. You know, I was with my older buddies. We were kind of into girls and Aaron's, you know, the game start and Harry Callis is doing the announcing. You better get off the field in the living room because he had the field set up. He had his bat, his helmet on. He would go from Harry Callis to now the pinch hitter Del Unser. And I mean, he's going, and then they had these Philly reels, you know, the 76 Phillies and Harry Callis was the, you know, did the announcing just like he did some NFL film stuff. Aaron has those to a T. I can give you a quote from the 76 Phillies reel. You know, the whatever it was back then. I could give him a quote, call Aaron right now, and he'll rattle off the rest of what Harry Callis said in that. It's unbelievable. He's always been like that, but he's just so much of Aaron, that the manager, the adult, the, you know, the poised. It's just him as a little kid. I see him on the field and I'm cracking up. Other people are there. I said, that's Aaron. I mean, if it was fourth down and Aaron didn't think in a touch football game in New Jersey that it was, he would argue with you. And I know it wasn't a first down. I'd say, Aaron, we went over the line. No, we didn't, Brett. And he had this little squeaky voice. When I see him argue with umpires, he's no different. That isn't an act. That's not something he's putting on a persona. You know, I like I know he likes to protect his players. He's passionate about that. But when he's out of the field, that's the same 10-year-old that I dragged around Medford, New Jersey with my older buddies because they liked Aaron to hang around. And when the sports got a little too, the age gap was too big, Aaron would just sit on the sidelines and he'd do all the announcing. And my buddies loved it.
The other thing he could do, Jeff, is he can look at any baseball card and tell you in which stadium the picture was taken. It's impossible. And he sends it to me every once in a while, just says, sends me a card on Twitter. I mean, on my texts it to me and says, which stadium? And I almost never get them right. It's like looking at a sonogram, if you ask me. But there's always a little tell with Booney. I'll send him a card, and I'll say, what stadium? And he'll write back like, you know, Candlestick Park. Don't waste my time. That's how good he is at these things. I'm amazed.
Before the renovation. He'll even throw that in as a caveat. Right.
And the other thing we used to do when we traveled together, I know all the uniform numbers of all the players in baseball history. Not all of them. I know a lot of them. Most people don't know that. They shouldn't know that. Booney knows uniform numbers as well as almost anyone I've ever met. So when we picked what I call from Ozzie to Oral, the greatest baseball players of all time from number 1 to number 55, Booney and I went out more than once and went through 1 through 55, and he knew the numbers as well as I did. I've never met a baseball player that can remember players' numbers better than Booney.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's borderline weirdo. That's how much he's into this. I mean,
that's how I feel about my dad. So yeah, borderline weirdo goes hand in hand.
I got to work with my dad. 1994, I got a phone call from the Cincinnati Reds. Davey Johnson's on the phone. Jim Bowden was the general manager. Said, Booney, you know, I'm calling to congratulate. We just made a trade with the Seattle Mariners. You're a Cincinnati Red. So I talked, you know, it's protocol. Davey Johnson's on the phone. I know Davey was a teammate of my father when I was a kid. You know, he's welcoming me to the team. We're good to have you. You know, da-da-da-da. Typical call. Says to me, he goes, your dad around? I said, why would my dad be around? I'm an adult. But yeah, I happen to be at his house. He's right here. I hand the phone to my dad, and I'm like, what's this about? Comes back, and he goes, how would you feel about me being your bench coach in Cincinnati? Now, Jeff, I turned white as a ghost. I said, wait a minute. I'm in the big leagues now. Now I'm going to have dad looking over my shoulder. Fast forward. I was so pessimistic about it. Fast forward. It was one of the greatest years of my career. absolutely loved having my dad. I treasure that time. Going into it, I had all these, you know, scenarios that he's going to be following me around. I want to go out with the boys and have a beer. There's dad. Completely opposite. Talk about being a pro. When we walked through those doors at Riverfront Stadium, it was coach player. And he hung with the coaching staff and treated me strictly as a player. The great benefits and the perks from that year was on the day off, I get to have lunch with my dad. And it was father son. And it was, hey, if he wanted to say some things like, you know, I noticed your room wasn't clean. You know, he'd have those for me. But it was so cool. And at the time, I didn't appreciate it as much. But moving on, I do now. Same with Aaron. I got to play as teammates with Aaron 1 year in 1998. I don't even think it was a full season. But I look back now and how special that was, because we walked through those doors. Aaron had his own crew, you know, the younger crew, the Sean Caseys of the world. I was me and Barry Larkin. We're an older generation, but you have cliques on teams. We didn't hang out on the road. But once again, he was my third baseman, and all I cared about was, Aaron, I don't care what you do. You just get me that ball. Get me that ball as fast as you can. I don't care if it's a good feed, bad feed. Get it to me, and then I'll work this double play. That's all I cared about. He was my third baseman when the game started. But the perk was, on an off day, I got to go have lunch with my brother. And at the time, you're in the grind, and you're worried about who's pitching tomorrow. I got to face Pedro, and then we're going to Atlanta, and I got Maddox, Smoltz, Glavine. So you don't care that you're playing with your brother. But then fast forward a few years, and it's like, wow, how many people get to play in the same infield with their brother? So those are my two stories of special times with my family. Now you're off on this venture, but you got to work, I think it was 2016, with your dad, Jeff, at the All-Star game.
Yeah, I've had the
opportunity. Tell me what that was like.
Yeah, you know, you hit it spot on. When you were on the team with your brother, you're players first, right? Dad and I had the opportunity to, I was play-by-play, he was color commentary for the celebrity softball game.
By the way, hold on.
Uh-oh. Watch this. Jeffrey, watch this.
He has exited the frame, coming
with
back
two
in.
Two wrong words to say to Brett Boone. Celebrity softball game. Look!
Now, that was it. For those of you listening to the Boone podcast, that was not scripted. I didn't expect that to come out. But by the way, just so everybody knows, I am the reigning champion. I'll try defend my title this year in Texas. Right. All right. Continue with the story.
He played 15 years in the big leagues, and he's bragging about the celebrity.
Timmy, this is one of my greatest trophies I've ever had. The gold gloves and the silver sluggers, they're awesome. But that belt, I'm telling you what, if I was a single man, that's a chick magnet right there.
Well, you get then, Booney, the excitement surrounding this, right? So ESPN gave me the chance to be the play-by-play, and my dad was the color commentator. And as you know, the game can get a bit haywire. There were more errors than runs scored. We weren't exactly putting this on a score sheet, but it was really cool because we were doing it to tape. It was not a live play-by-play. I had done it the previous year with Eduardo Perez, who was actually the one who pushed the bosses at ESPN to have me be a part of it. So Eddie and I did the game the year before. Dad had never called the game. He had played in it. He'd even done some sideline reporting, but he'd never been at the desk. So going into calling this game, and my dad, I think, would agree with this, I was more of the veteran broadcaster when it came to this exact moment, because every time a bad pitch was thrown, we had to reset. And Brett Boone, oh, and then it's a ball, right? Brett Boone up to bat, singled. Okay, foul. Reset. Brett Boone is here, and you had to do it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. So it's a completely different animal. And being able to do this with my dad and look at each other and point to each other and play point guard with each other, telling stories and ending together and giving each other time on the air was so much fun. But the entire time we were there, even though we were laughing and we were telling stories and poking fun, We were broadcasters. We were there to do a job. We were there to be entertaining. And as much fun as we have right in this very room doing the podcast, we are a father-son duo, but we're here to be entertaining, right? We're here to tell stories. And it was so, so cool to have that opportunity for my dad to see me in that first ever professional setting. I am a broadcaster. I'm supposed to be here. It was really special. And now I get to do it every week. And it's a dream come true. It really is.
One of the great moments ever, Brett, that I got to do that with Jeffrey. The only bad part was that Andy Jacobson, our producer, insisted that I dance with JoJo Siwa. Of course, I had no idea who she was.
I got a selfie with her. All right.
Well, I said, I'm not dancing on national television. I'm the worst dancer in the world. I'm more wooden than Pinocchio. I'm not dancing. And Jeffrey said, Dad, you got to do this for the show. You got to dance with JoJo Siwa. So I did, and it was predictably terrible. I looked like a complete fool, but I got I got 10 million likes on Dancing with JoJo Siwa. And I repeat, I didn't even know who she was at the time. So that was the only bad part about the celebrity softball game, was having to watch me dance.
I can't believe you brought up the JoJo Siwa. And Jeff was talking earlier about the Cal Ripken thing. He made a joke. Am I supposed to know who you are? So I go to this whole softball thing. I ended up having a great time. And some of the players were way better than I thought they were going to be. But I get there, you know, I get the call from Major League Baseball. You know, it was in Seattle. So I'm like, that's great. I need to go back up to the city. You know, that's kind of where, you know, my big years were, and I'm known the most. Of course, I'm going to go to Seattle for the All-Star game. So I agree to it. And I remember the day walking out onto the field, getting ready for the softball game, and it's getting real for me. And I turned it. Mike Cameron was there with me. He agreed to play with me. And I said, Cammy, I said, it sounded like a great idea 2 months ago to agree to this, but do you realize this city expects us to play like you're the center fielder, I'm the second baseman. I'm 54 years old. And he goes, well, what are you going to do? I said, here's what I'm going to do. My first at bat, I'm going to hit one as far as I can down the left field line. We'll see how the ball's carrying. He said, you're going to go deep? I said, what else am I going to do? If I don't go deep, I'm in trouble. And I'm leading off. They got me leading off. First pitch, I forget who was pitching. Maybe Jenny Finch was pitching. Bomb to left field. And Cammy's cracking up. I'm coming around third. He goes, you said you were going to do it. I said, of course. Now, I didn't really know if I was going to do it, but I had to pretend like I was. You got to fake it till you make it. So I said, Cammy, ball's carrying good. You can hit it out to any part of the park. Cammy ends up going deep. But long story short, the Siwa, I get a phone call from my kids, my stepgirls, and they say, JoJo Siwa's there. You got to get a picture. I don't know who JoJo Siwa is. And now to Jeff's story, I went up to this JoJo. Now, I'm Brett Boone. I'm in Seattle. I think I'm a pretty big deal, right? I said, hey, JoJo. She says, yeah. I said, could I get my kids would like me to get a picture with you. She gave me the look like, am I supposed to know who you are? That's why I laugh at the Siwa. I'm like, no way Timmy had an interaction with Siwa. She's still going strong. That's kind of a staple. Her and Jenny Finch are at that softball game every year.
I was so hoping for just a second when you said, I'm glad you brought up JoJo Siwa. Let's go to the clip here. Okay, so let's just
Even though it's not scripted, they might think out in TV land that it's right. Scripted, and it's not.
It's
100%.
No, not at all.
Jeff, when I was growing up, it was first it was your grandpa, then it was your dad. For me, you went to Syracuse, studied journalism. Did you start getting the questions about Tim Kirkchin? And did you feel anything like, well, you know, I got some pretty big shoes to fill? Because, you know, let's be honest. For you, those are pretty big shoes to fill. For me, coming after grandpa and dad, I didn't have that attitude. I had the more of, I'm going to fill them and some. But nevertheless, there is a little bit of that. It's out there, that it factor.
No, there's no doubt about it. And going to a school like Syracuse, where, I mean, you can't watch a sporting event or 9 out of 10 times, the play-by-play guy went to Syracuse. It's just the way it is. It's a great broadcasting school. And I'll never forget my first day at the Newhouse School. That's where all of the guys go, want to be broadcasters. I had my first basic communications class. So this is way before you take your big broadcasting classes. They're reading roll. And the professor gets to Jeffrey and takes this long pause and then tries her darndest to pronounce Kirkjian. She's obviously not a baseball fan. That's okay. I do not blame her. She hits me with a Kirkjian, and I hear from the front row, it's Kirkjian. I'm in the back of the classroom, so it wasn't me correcting. And then all of a sudden I say, yes, hi, here. And every guy turns to look at who, okay, we know that last name, and this he has to be related to Tim Kirkjian. And all of a sudden, after the class, I had a bunch of people, hey, you seem like a cool guy. Do you want to hang out? Do you want to be friends? You know, you got Thanksgiving plans? It's the first day of class. Why are you talking? I don't know any of you. So to that point, it was so funny and difficult at the same time to now have an identity. There were people, I'm sure, who thought to themselves, oh, this guy thinks he's just going to be the next Tim Kirkjian or the next Carl Ravitch or the next play-by-play guy for the next Major League Baseball team because he's related to Tim Kirkjian. That pressure that you talked about earlier, it's real and it's difficult. And at one point, it almost pushed me away from being a sports broadcaster. I now host a country music morning show in Philadelphia at 92.5 XTU. It's a blessing. I love music, as my dad mentioned earlier. I talk to artists. I talk about music. I talk about my life and what's going on and take calls and give away prizes. It's the greatest job. I love it so, so much. And I found my love. But there was a moment there where I was pushed away because of people talking about, oh, well, he thinks he's going to get all these jobs and everything. And then I found my love in music radio. And now I get to do baseball podcasting with my dad. Everything happens for a reason. And even though I felt that pressure, and one might say I almost ran away from the pressure, I found what I love to do in the meantime. So I was so, so blessed for the lessons my dad taught me, how to tell a good story, how to be engaging, how to interview somebody, how to be a better broadcaster. I use it every single day in my life now.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of Jeffrey. He spoke at graduation for the Newhouse School, which is the big journalism school at Syracuse. But what you might not know, Brett, is that Jeffrey was also the mascot, Otto the Orange,
for four years.
Yeah, and so I spent $50,000 a year for him to dress up in a little orange suit. Jeff, tell us how you became Otto the Orange out of nowhere.
Now that's tremendous.
You know, it comes from my writing ability, really, that it happened. What my dad taught me was telling a good story. When we got to the Carrier Dome, the very first football game, there were little slips kind of just all around. It says, do you want to be Otto? Well, email this email. So I went back to my dorm that night and created and crafted an email that was second to none. I said, I'm going to write the most beautifully written email. And at the very bottom, you know, I had heard to be any mascot, you have to be a certain height, certain weight, certain build, you know, the whole thing. So I ended up listing my statistics like you would find on the back of a baseball card. But then I converted it also into centimeters and kilograms and everything to kind of add a little joke at the end. And ultimately ended up getting a call saying we would love to talk to you. This is the only thing in college that could really get me to shut my mouth for a little bit because you're not allowed to talk when you're Otto the Orange. But it gave me such a great perspective. And I'll tell the one story that I love telling about being a mascot. The first ACC tournament of all time for Syracuse, when they had just went from Big East to the ACC, I had an opportunity to go as Otto the Orange. And it was the coolest thing to be the mascot. It was a secret, but it was very self-serving almost. People cheer, love to see you. It's so exciting. We went down to a children's hospital in the heart of North Carolina. We're in Greensboro. Nobody cares about Syracuse down there. Trust me, they got 10 teams to worry about, and none of them are Syracuse in the middle of upstate New York. So we go to this hospital. Everybody wants to see UNC, the Blue Devil, all these people. Nobody wants to see Syracuse except for one little boy who was coming down, and he was battling leukemia. And they said, Otto, you have to stay because he is Syracuse's biggest fan. He comes down, he gets out of his wheelchair and proceeds to give me the starting lineup the way the announcers do of the starting five that year. Starting at shooting guard, Trevor Cooney. And his parents are crying in the corner. And I am, Otto, crying inside of the suit. I'm giving him all my free t-shirts that I've hidden. I went into my personal bag of my clothing and gave him everything. My sweatpants, my t-shirts, my hats. I said, I don't care. I'll figure out the university giving me more stuff later. Because it was the coolest moment. And his parents came up to my handler and whispered and said, he hasn't gotten out of bed or the wheelchair in a week. And this was the best moment for him. And that's when I realized that this is so much bigger than what I get a chance to do. I get to be the mascot. No, this is about what it represents. And, you know, you go down the rabbit hole of meeting your heroes, right? I think it's great to meet your heroes because you get to know them. You get to really know them. And I think it's special that we got to give him this moment. That's my favorite mascotting story, without a doubt.
That's you can't write this. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, not scripted. The Otto. That is tremendous. Timmy, as a father that you remember doing what you did, young Jeff growing up, do you remember giving him any one piece of advice? Like, all right, if I can give you anything, it's this.
Well, beyond you got to show up, work hard, be prepared, all that. That's all the corny stuff. I used to tell Jeffrey, and he's still very good at this, is to be curious about everything. Like when you're watching something, ask yourself in a baseball sense, you know, why did they bunt in the eighth inning there? Or why was Brett Boone playing up the middle on that play? Or why didn't he steal on that pitch? That's the curiosity that my father taught me and my mother. And I was always asking questions as a kid. So that's what I want Jeffrey and all young people to recognize, that you have to ask questions in order to learn. And don't be afraid to go ask somebody. Don't be afraid to go to Lou Piniella and say, Lou, look, here's how I saw that play in the sixth inning. Did I see it properly? Be curious. Keep your eyes open, your ears open. Listen to people who know the business better than you do. It'll carry you a long way.
Very cool. All right, Jeff, how much are you following baseball now? Quite a bit?
Now more than ever with co-hosting a podcast, but we live in the Philly area. My wife is a huge Phillies fan now.
Who is it that lives in Philly?
I mean,
you got to be Sixers, Eagles, Flyers, cheesesteak, hoagie, Phillies. That's the way it is. It's tremendous. As an athlete, I never got to play in a place like Philly, New York. Seattle was great. Cincinnati was great. But Philly, it's just a different animal. You saw that last year in the playoffs.
No doubt. And my dad loves telling this story. My wife grew up in Las Vegas. I did radio there. That's where we met. And then I got the job to come here. And she grew up not really a big baseball fan, didn't have a team, right? So we come out here. We start going to games. She falls in love with it. It becomes our thing, right? We both adopt rooting for the Phillies. And we went to the NLCS game, Padres-Phillies. It was like 6 runs scored in the first inning between the two teams. It was so exciting. And then they make it to the World Series back in 2022. We say, we got to go. So we go and we end up sitting nosebleed seats at the combined no-hitter where the Phillies just completely crapped the bed. 0 hits across the board. And my wife looks at my dad the next day and says, this is the most boring game I've ever been to. And my dad is saying, it's historic. The fact that you got to see a no-hitter in the World Series, Emily, do you not understand? And of course, the next day, Kyle Schwarber leads the game off with the home run. Of course, that has to happen the very next day.
Right.
She wanted action.
Yeah. Right. We told Emily, Emily's been to 5 games and she's seen a no-hitter in the World Series. I've been to 4,500 games and I've seen 1 no-hitter in the World Series. We're tied, and I have to explain the historical significance of that.
Well, Tim, Jeff, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Your new podcast, who do you got coming up on the show and where can the listeners find it?
Well, this is so exciting. We just had Chris Young, general manager of the Texas Rangers. Next week, we get John Smoltz on leading up to Masters Week. He has 11 hole-in-ones. I mean, that's just absurd to think about. So we're going to talk golf with him. We're going to talk being a Hall of Fame pitcher, but more importantly, about playing golf with Tiger Woods, for goodness sake. So I'm really excited about that. You can get your podcast wherever you're listening right now, wherever you get your podcast. You can go to greatgamerwhat.com. Super easy to find us. We have so much fun, and we love that people are along for the journey with us.
All right, Timmy, Jeff.
Thank you, Brad.
Tim and
Jeff.
Have
a great time.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. For those of you listening, watching the Boom Podcast, I appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, keep it right here.